I'm guessing that I must have been about 10 years old, and my father and I had just finished lunch in a restaurant, and we were in the car on our way home. And suddenly he gasped and called my attention to the forest clearing near the road. Birds. There were birds. There were so many of them that we could hear them through the closed car windows. Thousands of them. Tens of thousands of them. So thinking quickly, he turned the car around and pulled back so that we were parked by the edge of the clearing. And we got out of the car, stepping into the foreign, chaotic, delightful crush of sound. Starlings filled all of the trees as well as the sky. We watched as they gathered their collective strength into the air, so many of them that the light from the mid-afternoon sun was dimmed. They became an expanding and contracting organism, diving and rising, flattening out and ballooning, all moving in the same direction, somehow all moving together as one. I have since come to learn that a flock of starlings moving together in this way is known as a murmuration. Brandon Keim reported on this phenomenon in Wired magazine. He writes, "Starling flocks, it turns out, are best described with equations of critical transitions, systems that are poised to tip, to be almost instantly and completely transformed, like metals becoming magnetized or liquid turning to gas. Each starling in a flock is connected to every other. When a flock turns in unison, it's a phase transition, which is what we see when a solid transforms to a liquid or a liquid to a gas. What we see in the beautiful flight of these birds in unison is a concrete illustration of what interdependence looks like. They communicate in some way, whether it's chemical, biological, or the new physics. We aren't completely clear, but they affect one another and they transform." As Roger mentioned a few minutes ago, I am the Congregational Giving Director for our Unitarian Universalist Association, which means that I manage the annual program fund, which asks each of our congregations to support the larger faith financially. Your fellowship has been an honor congregation, contributing the full amount requested in the past. It's been a little while since you've been able to give at that level. I want to say since 1995. But I want to first encourage you to return to that full level of giving and explain why that other congregations are counting on you to do so. But also to thank you for the tremendous support that you have consistently provided, which does make a difference to Unitarian Universalists around our association. Your support of our program allows us all to fly together, along with the other contributing congregations in the association. So here is what that support does. Your disciplined giving provides worship materials for the small struggling fellowship in rural Texas. It provides a comprehensive search and settlement process for a congregation in Maine in the midst of calling their very first minister. Your giving allows OWL, the Our Whole Lives Sexuality Education curriculum, to give hope to a young person in Nebraska. Your support saves the marriage of a couple in Maryland who never before knew that there was a possibility for them to attend church together, given their previous religious backgrounds. Your help from here in Appleton provides every member of the congregation in Anchorage a subscription to the UU World magazine. The list goes on and on. I could fill our time with these examples. What I'm trying to say is that your covenantal support gives real people real hope and brings concrete connection and spiritual sustenance to Unitarian Universalists across our association. So thank you on behalf of all of them. Now, there's a joke told about Unitarian Universalists. Perhaps you have heard it. Outside the pearly gates, there are two signs, and one says heaven and points this way, and the other says discussion of heaven. So I see you have heard this joke, and points this way. And the joke is that the Unitarian Universalists will choose the discussion of heaven over the real thing every time. What is that about? Well, I think the joke actually points to something true about us. We like to think about ideas. We like to learn. We like to discuss. And in some congregations, I've been told that there's even a tendency to enjoy debating. I don't know if that's true here. But the point of the religious life is not to learn about being kind. It is to be kind. The point of the religious life is not to intellectually consider theories of love. It is to be loving. The point of the religious life is not to become well-versed in the study of generosity. It is to be generous. And of course, we don't become generous by learning about it in theory, by reading really great books, or even by attending stewardship workshops. We learn to be generous by doing it, by practicing it. The only way to get it is to be it, to be generous. How is it that we who have so much can feel as though we have so little when it comes to giving? We live in a culture, of course, which tells us that we can never have enough. More accurately, that we can never keep enough. But the goal of the religious life, as all of the sages have told us throughout history, is to experience an unclenching of the fist, an unlocking of the heart, and an opening of the hand to share. There are many ways to practice the art of generosity, and not all of them have to do with money. Be generous with your presence. In this day and age of constant computer connectivity, it is rare to see someone waiting for a bus or a train or even in line at the grocery store, not looking down at their phone. Do an experiment. Use that time instead to talk with someone, to make a human connection in this time of loneliness when people desperately need to be connected. Or if you aren't feeling talkative, simply send thoughts of loving kindness to the person next to you. The idea is to live as though we are really present in our lives, to see what's before us and the people who are before us, and to engage. We may think that we are doing something for another, but it is we ourselves who are transformed. Be generous with your presence. Be generous with your attention. When your partner or child or friend speaks with you, do an experiment and focus on them completely. When you're at the gas station or the library, make a point of paying attention to the clerk. Imagine that they are the most important person in the world at that moment, for they are. I ride airplanes a lot of the time, and my seatmate told me just this past weekend that something like 20% of the people who enter a plane greet the flight personnel who are standing there saying hello. Like people just walk right by without even responding or acknowledging that they're being greeted. So that's a new resolution I have, to actually make contact with each of the people saying hello to me as I walk on the plane. The point is, every person that we cross paths with longs to be seen and acknowledged and honored for who and how they are. By recognizing the truth of this and acting on it, we may think we are doing something for another, but it is we ourselves who are transformed. And yes, be generous with your money. Do an experiment. Give a very large tip to your next server, so large that you know it will make their day or their week or even their month. Give someone who is in need asking for money on the street a very large bill. Drop off a supply of paper and pencils and Kleenex at an elementary school near you. So many teachers are buying supplies out of their own money these days. These are examples. You can think of many, many others, but these are ideas to practice in a senseless act of generosity mindset. Do it without any chance of being acknowledged to get back to the basics of giving. By giving in this way, we may think we are doing something for another, but it is we ourselves who are transformed. Did you know that, statistically speaking, Unitarian Universalists are the second highest earning religious group? That's just statistically. And I know, perhaps, what some of you might be thinking, because I share this statistic with many congregations across our association, and everyone thinks it's not true there. So I don't know how it all adds up, but somehow, the statistic is that Unitarian Universalists are the second highest earning folks in terms of other religious groups. So where do you suspect that we might rank in terms of our support for our own faith as compared to those other religious folks? Any ideas? But bottom. We are absolutely dead last. And I don't think it's because we don't care about our tradition. But there's some mismatch between our values and where we put our resources that I hope we will seek to remedy. The Chronicle of Philanthropy published a study in 2012 ranking the states in terms of percentage of income given to charity. You might guess which state's residents are the most generous. Utah, where charitable giving averages about 10.6% of income. The next most generous states are interesting: Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, giving between 6 and 7% of income. So Wisconsin, where do you think you might be as compared to other states? As I said earlier, I'm not sure why anyone would know this except a nerd like myself who is interested in philanthropy, but I'm sorry to tell you that out of 50 states, yours is 44th. So the average portion of income given to charity in this state is 3.4% of income. But I want to assure you that this is not a sermon to bring shame or guilt into your life. I think that it's quite the opposite, because what I'm hoping is that your giving and your pledging to this community will be grounded in your individual spiritual health, that you'll be making active choices based on your highest values. And that as a result, your support will also build our movement's collective power. So this sermon is about that, your spiritual health and our collective power. I do think that it's interesting and important to have a sense of where we stand in our giving as Unitarian Universalists so that you can be armed with that knowledge when you make your own financial pledge for the support of your religious community, this fellowship which has changed your life and is changing many other lives as well. You can be a part of the murmuration so needed to help move us in a new direction, one in which values and resources are fully aligned and in perfect integrity. If you are enriched by this faith, then you are asked to enrich it. Here's another way for me to describe why I think it's important to support Unitarian Universalism. It's illustrated by my favorite New Yorker cartoon of all time, which depicts a traditional God-looking figure standing with an angel, and they must be on another planet or at least a very, very high cloud because they're looking down on our Earth, and it's very clear that our Earth is not in good shape. There are mushroom clouds and wars and conflicts raging. It's clear. So the God figure looks down and looks exasperated and says, "This human experiment has gone on long enough. Give the hippos control." Which has become our little saying in my family when we hear something else on the news about how the world just is falling apart. We say, "Give the hippos control. You know, maybe they would do a better job than we're doing." But this world is in need of the healing message of our faith because it is filled with suffering and injustice and division. Our communities, all of our communities, need the presence of civic-minded, justice-oriented, religious allies with open minds and open hearts. 50 years ago, a number of our forebears showed up in Selma, heeding Martin Luther King Jr.'s call, just as our people near Ferguson, Missouri today and elsewhere are standing up to proclaim that Black Lives Matter. There is a child being born this very weekend, right nearby at Theda Clark or St. Elizabeth Hospital, who will discover themselves to be gay, or lesbian, or bisexual, or transgender. And they will long for a place such as this, in which to be fully accepted as they explore who they are becoming. When they discover this fellowship, it will, not hypothetically, but literally be life-saving. But of course, the world is not only painful. It is also filled with heart-wrenching beauty, miracles of nature, music that heals the wounded soul, times of justice actually fulfilled, celebrations of growth, new life, love that triumphs, children that grow into thoughtful, kind, amazing youth and young adults right here in our midst, mockingbirds that sing Mahler. We give to this place because it supports us at every stage of life, no matter our circumstances, and because this church encourages us to grow spiritually, which may well be the reason we are alive. I want to invite you into a deeper relationship with the spirit of stewardship. When you make your pledge of financial commitment, I ask you to be generous this year to a degree that you never have been before. We are the only ones who can begin the shift. So as you personally commit to an appropriately outrageous level of generosity, 10% of your income, perhaps, as they do in Utah. As you personally commit to that, you not only shift the starling effect within your congregation's system that is poised to tip to be almost instantly and completely transformed, but you also have a part in changing the giving in your larger district and region. Most significantly, though, you have the experience of spiritual growth that is only found through sacrificial giving. I urge you to find the stewardship table right in the fellowship hall after the service to make your commitment from a place of gratitude for the opportunity to so bless this community that blesses so many. And if you've already made your commitment, I invite you to consider growing your generosity even further. We are all being called to make a real difference in the world. I close with a poem called Blackbirds by Julie Cadwalader Staub. I am 52 years old and have spent truly the better part of my life out of doors. But yesterday, I heard a new sound above my head, a rustling, ruffling quietness in the spring air. And when I turned my face upward, I saw a flock of blackbirds rounding a curve I didn't know was there. And the sound was simply all those wings, just feathers against air, against gravity. The whole flock taking a long, wide turn as if of one body and one mind. How do they do that? Oh, if we lived only in human society with its cruelty and fear, its apathy and exhaustion, what a puny existence that would be. But instead, we live and move and have our being here, in this curving and soaring world, so that when every now and then mercy and tenderness triumph in our lives, and when even more rarely we manage to unite and move together toward a common good, we can think to ourselves, ah, yes. This is how it's meant to be. Yes.